you get started, if you have a question, I mean, with that, yeah, if you're ready.
I guess one of my questions, it's probably pretty simple, but just, when you are in, life, as life happens and you're busy, Mike, what do you do to keep spiritually in tune when you don't have, you're in a season where it's more of, pushing forward and moving forward, and you don't have as much time, like, quiet time and downtime as you normally would. I mean, how do you really keep, because I'm finding that a little bit challenging. I'm kind of in that season and I'm like trying to figure out how to have a good balance, but also just keep spiritually in tune and walking in the spirit and being able to visually see when everything else is going on around me.
Real sense when it comes to maintaining intimacy and relationship, basically it's just discipline. There's no secret to it. You just have to want to spend more time with God than you do with anything else. So when it comes to my time with God, it comes first before everything else, and I don't ever put anything in front of it. So the first thing I do when I wake up is to engage, and then I spend, the next period of time engaging with God in it. And I do that all the time. Sometimes I can do that, when I wake up early in bed, and I spend the first half an hour just hanging out and opening my first love gate and things. Sometimes I'll get up and then, engage in more judicial things or whatever. But essentially, I spend most of the first part of every day with God. And if I'm busy doing something else, then I get up earlier so that I can spend time with God, which means then I have to adjust my lifestyle around that. It means basically that I wouldn't be, staying up till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning if I'm getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So, I tend to not stay up really late if I know I need to be up early with God. But I have I've developed and disciplined myself to do that. So I don't need really much more than 5 or 6 hours sleep, because I've trained my body not to not need any more than that. If I get any more than that, it doesn't really do any benefit. And if I get less than that, then, I can manage that for a while, but I know I need that amount. So essentially, when it comes to a busy season of pressing forward into things or doing anything like that, if you don't put God first, then you're going to be less effective, because the relationship, everything flows out of that relationship. Everything flows out of intimacy. I get my source of life from drinking the river of life, from engaging in the pathway of relationship and opening up my life for a flow of God. If I'm not going to do that on a daily basis, then there's going to be no flow. And you can do that for a little while, but it's not long when the resource that you've built runs out if you don't continually get a refreshing and an inflow of life from the spirit and from heaven. And if I'm going to do something and I am busy, or I have got new things I'm pressing into, if I do not go and get a mandate for doing that and then administer that in heaven, then why would I expect it to be successful? If I'm not framing my day, if I'm not coming from a perspective of faith and knowing what it is God wants me to do each day, then I'm on my own. I'm doing things my own way. I'm trying to work it out myself. So, to be honest, it's like I don't think you can live the Christian life without actually putting God first and giving him first love, first priority. And to me, that means time. I know a lot of people say, "Oh, I spend my time in the car with God and we just talk." Yeah, that's great. But your wife or husband wouldn't like that very much if that's the only time you ever spend with them. It's like God wants us to show him that he's our priority. And I think giving him first time is the best way to do it. Jesus did that. You know, he spent time with God alone in the mountain, away from others, to make sure that his relationship with God came first. You know, in Isaiah it says, morning by morning he wakens me with the ear of a disciple. Because he wants to converse and fellowship and communicate. And if we don't open that area of the kingdom, that first love gate, daily, then there is no flow, you know. And to me that's discipline, but it's not legalism. It's a joy, it's a delight to spend time with God in intimacy. Is a delight to me because my soul wants it. And if my soul wants it because I've given my soul a taste of what it is to engage with the living God, then my body comes absolutely in line. So yeah, my body will never stop me spending time with God, no matter how tired I am, or no matter how, because my body is in subjection to my soul, which is in subjection to my spirit. So I operate in wholeness and everything works together, you know. So a lot of people don't like that answer because I think people want it easy. And you know, you cannot develop or maintain a relationship without spending the quality time in doing it, because you want to, you know, not out of fear, not out of any negative things, but out of desire. So I absolutely desire to spend time in intimacy because that is where I am going to be able to fulfill my destiny and flow out of the life of God all the time, you know. So that's really how, for me personally, I couldn't do it any other way. You know, I've tried, you know, I've tried to take shortcuts and it doesn't work, you know. Intimacy comes out of spending intimate time with one another. You know, if I want to hear God's voice, then I need to be in a position where I can hear him effectively and then flow with him, you know. And that means disciplining everything else to make sure nothing gets in the way of that. You know, I would never get up and do something without spending time with God, ever. I just can't think, you know, I can't think of the last time. Even when I'm on holiday and things like that, I still want to give the first of my time with God. So I'll wake up. You know, God will wake me up. I'll wake up to give me the time to be able to just surrender the day, engage, make sure I'm flowing. Even if it's my mandate for today is have fun and to enjoy my holiday, then I will create that around myself. I will frame that by what I say from the heavens in terms of favor and blessing. You know, when we were actually on our holiday, we were favored everywhere we went. All the grandchildren were chosen ahead of everybody else to be in the front of parades, to open things, to be in film shots. They were just chosen because that's what I framed. I was expecting favor and blessing. You know, we had, you know, everything operated to our blessing. And that's what I expect as the child of God. I expect to live in blessing, but I'm responsible to frame that and to speak it into being and then to walk in it, you know. So that's what I do, you know, even in simple things. It doesn't take me long. You know, I can frame my day from a perspective of, hey, you're going to have a relaxing day, it's going to be fun. You know, I can frame that in 5 minutes, you know. But in general, if I'm looking for a normal day where I'm interacting with people, where I'm looking to engage in creatively creating things in terms of whether it's the word or messages or different things, whether I'm looking to engage in groups and therefore I'm looking for wisdom to flow, you know, I need to frame that. You know, Jesus did, and I think he only did what he saw the Father doing. So, you know, why would I think I can do it any differently? And it shows my dependence. You know, I'm dependent on him, not independent of him. I'm interdependent in that sense. And you know, he gives me more and more permission and authority to do things because I'm maturing in it. Then before, he used to do a lot of things on my behalf for me because I didn't understand or know what to do. Now I do a lot of things because he's given me that, and he trusts me to frame things and to call things into being and to do things. He trusts me in that. So, you know, it's definitely, it has to be a lifestyle that we follow. I mean, that's who we are, not something that we do. You know, my time with God is not something that I do. It's just who I am. I am a child of God. So I spend time with my father and my brother and my friend, and, you know, I spend time with them because that's who I am. You know, and that obviously didn't happen overnight. You know, it took time to develop that and a willingness to surrender and to sacrifice and get rid of all the junk in my soul that would want me to find things and a source in other ways. You know, so I've worked through a lot of that until, you know, my desire is for God. You know, it's like, you know, we got the World Cup starting soon, and a number of people saying, wow, great, we're going to, you know, and I'm thinking, great, yeah, I love football. It, you know, I will watch, you know, some of the games, but it will never, ever come in front of doing anything else. Some people say, oh, that's it, I'm off for a month, I'm going to watch football for a month. I'm just thinking, get a life. You know, for me, it's like, you know, I'll watch an England game, and fortunately, most of them are in the evening, so that's quite good for me. But I'll never, ever say, oh, I can't do this or that because there's a football game. Even though I love football, I don't love football as much as I love God or my relationship with God. So for me, it's just not an issue. 5 years ago, it would have been an issue. I would have actually organized things around the fact that there was a big match and therefore I want to watch it, so I won't arrange anything on that night. To now, arrange whatever God wants and whether it's convenient to the watching the football or not. Next week I'm off to Germany doing a conference. You know, one of those conference nights happened to be when England play their next match against Uruguay. It doesn't bother me in the slightest, but it would. Is that okay? Does that answer what you're looking for? Well, maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it does. I just and I have had quiet time. It just seems like that digging in deeper with the things like the courts and, you know, going deeper has been a little bit of a challenge, and, you know, keeping more of the God consciousness as you're going through your busy day than or, you know, earthly consciousness or what you have to do. So trying to be more God conscious and keeping his presence surrounding you no matter what you're doing, you know.
But he is, and we are, if we connect our spirit with that realm. And that's why we have to learn to live connected. And
I think that's my challenge, is the connectedness in going and doing, or staying connected, and awareness of the present.
But I think it flows out of my spirit ruling and governing, because my spirit is connected. It's one with him. When I join myself to him, my spirit is one with him. So in reality, it is connected. I just have to be conscious of it. Now that means I need my soul in cooperation to be conscious of the spirit and looking for whatever flows from the spirit rather than whatever flows from the outside. So I need to train my soul to look to the inside rather than looking to the out. You know, and you can do things to help do that, you know, if it's a problem. You know, one thing is to tell your soul to do it. You know, actually rule. It's what David said in Psalm 103, I think. You know, soul, you will not forget the benefits of the Lord. You will remember. You know, and therefore you sometimes it's like, if it's a problem, then we need to rule and overcome that. If it's a problem rooted into something in our life, then we deal with that and get ministry and deal with it. But if it's just habits then we need to break, then we need to develop new ones. You know, and, you know, it's like Brother Lawrence, I think, isn't it? Practicing the presence of God. You know, he consciously chose every so often to deliberately stop and recenter himself and focus and fix his eyes on Jesus. Now, you know, that trains your soul to be more sensitive, but you have to do it. You know, when I first started doing this years ago, you know, I would set my watch to ping every hour, and then every hour I would just, for a couple of minutes, just recenter, refocus, think about Jesus, surrender back to him. You know, and I didn't know then about engaging heaven or anything, but I was looking to engage his presence and make sure that I wasn't just off doing my own thing or going and flowing here, there and everywhere, but I always came back to that place where I was consciously aware and looking for him and looking for everything else. So, you know, that it is something you have to choose to do, and then you have to press in to make it a lifestyle. You know, it takes about 6 weeks or 40 days, surprisingly, to establish a new way of thinking or a new pattern of life. So it's that 40-day period of testing. You know, are we willing to go through that 40-day period of testing to establish a new way of thinking, a new way of acting, a new way of all, you know? So, yeah, a lot of it is you just have to keep practicing and training so that you're in a place where your spirit is engaged and active and in control, you know, rather than our soul just leading according to whatever happens. Because then we're under the circumstances rather than over them. And we need to be in charge of the circumstances around our life. You know, which means ruling, which is what the kingdom is about. Establishing heavenly government in me, around me, through me, so that I rule and nothing else does, you know. And it doesn't happen overnight, you know, but it really does require this whole thing. If you desire it enough, you will be disciplined until it becomes a delight. And, you know, mostly if you can go for 40 days, it's really establishing a new way of pattern of thinking, work at it for two weeks, and then work at it for another 2 weeks, and then you then start to establish it, you can develop a whole different lifestyle. It's just 40 days seems a long time for people. You know, a fast is a long time, but it's something we can do. Now, most people would think, I couldn't do a 40 fast because it's, you know, just impossible, I couldn't do it, blah, blah, blah. Well, the reality is we can, but you have to be willing to do that. Now, I'm not talking necessarily about a food fast. You may need to fast what you're looking to come away from if you're going to establish something new. I mean, the best way to do it is to do an inventory of what you spend your time doing. Spend a week and analyze the week and say, okay, how much time do I spend with God? Actually, real quality time. How much time do I spend, work? How much time do I spend asleep? How much time do I spend watching the TV? How much time do I spend listening to other things? How much time? Just do an inventory, categorize your time, then you actually begin to see where your values are and what you value. Because you will pursue what you value, and you'll value what you pursue, and there'll be something that is clear. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that's really legalistic. No, it's just a tool to help us to check up where we're at. You know, where am I? You know, if I'm spending 12 hours a week playing tennis and 12 minutes with God, then I'm going to get much better playing tennis and not much better in my relationship with God. And you just got to look at, what are the things I'm doing? Where are my desires? You know, where are the desires of my heart focused? And actually be honest about it with ourselves. Be honest to establish that, and then you can do something about it. But it was always going to take discipline to change or establish anything new. before it becomes that delight that it's just who I am, it's part of who I am, it's my lifestyle. I don't have to think about it anymore because I've established that pathway. You know, it's the same thing, establishing pathways into heaven. If you don't tread them down and walk the same pathway over and over again, it won't be yours. You know, I can open a door for someone to go into a realm in heaven, but it won't be theirs unless they go back and establish it as their pathway that they engage and they walk on and they follow. Then that becomes memorized within them. Their neural pathways are connected to it. Their memories are established, and it's just easy to access it. But it will never happen unless you walk the pathways and tread them down and make them yours. If you do, then it's a lifestyle that's delightful. If it isn't that, then it becomes a struggle. Then why? You know, why is it a struggle? What haven't developed? I've got to do it. You know, you're even to the degree that in the realm of heaven, when you're
Okay, never happened this minute. Oh, here he is.
Even if you are engaging on a mountain or you've engaged in certain things, the level of authority that God will entrust you with will be determined by the level of transformation on those levels, you know, dividing soul and spirit, thoughts and intentions of the heart, bone and marrow. If you haven't done that, if you've still got different seed operating in you, if you still have different bloodlines or iniquity operating in you, the level of authority you can administer by is going to be limited by that. That's why we go into the realms of heaven by presenting ourselves as a living sacrifice. That's why we have to continually submit to the transformation that Jesus can bring as we surrender to him. You know, I still do that every day, even though majority of times there isn't an awful lot he wants to deal with. But when he does, he shows me something and I look to deal with it. I never want to get to the point where I think, oh, yeah, this is easy, I've done it all, and get complacent. I want continual transformation and transfiguration until I'm operating fully in the image of Jesus and have everything restored to me that was Adam's in the first creation and what Adam would have had if he hadn't have sinned, because he would have also grown in understanding and the revelation of the fire stones and the intimacy that that brought and everything else it brought. You know, so I want all of that. You know, well, I'm not going to get it unless it's the desire of my heart and I'm pursuing it with everything I've got, really. So.
That's good. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
You have to leave early, why don't you...
Yeah. Okay. Well, in terms of, you know, I wouldn't have done the 40-day fast unless God had asked me to do it, you know. But he had caught hold of my heart in a 3-day period where I engaged in worship at a conference and just plugged totally into his connecting with him. You know, so he'd captured my heart in a fresh way. So I had a desire to engage in intimacy. And so, you know, what I did in doing that, I wouldn't have just done it if God really hadn't have encouraged me to do it. You know, and in doing it, I was prepared. So I knew what was coming. I knew that I had an invitation to come up into heaven, because I had a prophetic word given to me with that invitation, with the instruction to study it, meditate on this for 7 weeks, you know. So that's what I went in with it for. I also had very clear revelation that this was going to be a rough ride to start with. Because I had a vision where I was on a cross upside down, and if not upside down that way, but sort of flying on this cross in the atmosphere, and I saw the need for crucifixion of the flesh. Now, I had no idea at that point what I was letting myself in for, other than, you know, I knew it wasn't going to be easy. The actual fasting was easy. You know, the food side of it was not a problem at all. But whatever God was doing in it, the first 20 odd days, 20, I think it was probably 21 days, literally my whole body was on fire. It's like at night my bones were burning. It just felt like I was in fire. You know, it was really uncomfortable. You know, I can't say I can exactly say that I knew what was happening, other than it wasn't a normal thing. You know, it wasn't just as a result of the fast or my body detoxing or anything like that. Because it's like my body and my hand were on fire, my head wasn't. So it was like my head was absolutely normally cold, but my body was literally burning. You know, so there's something going on. But in that first period, I spent a lot of time praying in tongues. A lot of time just lying on my face, repenting, asking God to show me anything I need to repent of, you know. And I did a lot of repenting. Things did come, but after I'd engaged with God in heaven, then the whole process really started. And then I realized, you know, I was repenting of things that, you know, I was happy and comfortable to repent of. That came to me because I was open to receive them. After I engaged in heaven and I opened, looked about gateways and opening up the flow inside, I had to be a whole load more honest to realize all the things that had afflicted my soul, my mindsets, my attitudes, my sin, you know, lots of stuff. And then I went through a whole nother period where I went through all the gateways of my life, each year of my life. And ask for every pattern to get revealed so I could repent and renounce of it and deal with it. And all that was doing was doing dividing soul and spirit. It was just the external behavioral patterns that I had really were operating in me. Later on, I had to then deal with the thoughts and intentions of my heart, you know. And later on, I then needed to deal with bone and marrow and genetic and bloodline and iniquity. But the initial willingness to surrender enabled me to engage God at a different level. Would it have happened without that? I don't. Not for me. No. I'm not saying everyone has to go on a fast to do it because they don't. But for me, I knew I needed to because I had an invitation. And you know, I had had one previous encounter where I'd been in heaven several years before, couldn't go back to it, but now I knew I was invited to come back. So, you know, it was like, okay, I'll do whatever. Whatever it takes, I will do. You know, and so, you know, shutting myself away You know, I was in the privileged position to be able to shut myself away and do nothing else. Because, you know, the church here knew and the other leaders knew that this was something that was going to cause breakthrough for the church, not just for me. And they fasted along with me. Everyone did a day. You know, people volunteered and they did a day on the 40 days with me. And I blogged the whole experience so that they were able to connect with it, what I was doing. First 18 days, really all about engaging the Word in revelation. And so I had loads of revelation from the Word, although I didn't know the context of a lot of it until afterwards. But so I had loads of that. Yeah, pretty intimate experiences in the Word, but not in heaven. And then, you know, I went into the trance, went into heaven, and then spent the next 3 weeks just going in and out and engaging God in my heart, engaging God in the realms of heaven. No idea where I was or what I was doing. You know, it was literally, they were virtually all involuntary experiences. I just positioned myself and surrendered to it. And God took me to places, showed me things. Many forerunner experiences that I wasn't able to re-engage in for a while. You know, I didn't understand anything about mountains and all that stuff. No idea. I had no idea about it. I was just taken to various places and I saw things, you know, went onto the timeline, loads of things. You know, would it have happened without the desire and the discipline? No, not for me. But I don't believe everyone needs to go on a fast, but they do need to pursue with the desire of their heart and be willing to engage. If there are things you're looking to overcome, if the fast was, you know, a really positive experience for me, even though it was very difficult. You know, I read a lot. You know, I read all about God's generals, and I spent just time. You know, the first thing I did was God said, I want you to spend the first hour of the day just praying in tongues. Yeah, which I did. But I certainly soon learned that praying in tongues without actually fixing your eyes on Jesus doesn't actually bear a huge amount of fruit. So, you know, I was trying not to think about anything because I just wanted to pray in tongues. But actually, all the thoughts that were coming was wanting me to engage. You know, so I learned very quickly. Actually, you can pray in tongues for an hour and not benefit a massive amount. Or you can pray in tongues an hour and it draw life from scripture, draw life from pictures, draw life from encounters with God all over. You know, so that in itself was you know, a very positive experience. You know, that really helped. So, I don't know if that answers, but you know, that's as much as I've got on that. Interesting. Actually, yeah, I do. I'm not saying that these guys have got it all right, but there's a guy and there's a movement that's called breatharianism, where people basically just break bread in a small amount each day, and they just believe that because the Spirit of God is the source of life, that the Spirit of God and the breath of life can sustain them. And the guy, I've looked into it. You know, I've not necessarily desired to pursue it yet because I like eating, to be honest. You know, it's nice stuff. But I do believe it's possible, and I do believe some of the, you know, the desert sages and saints and some of those guys that are 200 or 300 years old, yes, they do not eat and drink like we do. So it is definitely possible, I think. And these guys seem pretty healthy people, even though they're not eating anything. But you have to be certainly in faith. You can't do it on a whim, I don't think. Yeah. I can't remember what the guy's name is, but I know the whole thing is breatharianism.
It's Kirby. His name is Kirby.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Kirby, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I did look into it, and in looking into it, he certainly seemed to be coming from a fairly Christian perspective. It didn't seem new agey from a scriptural perspective. There's some preaching sermons and things that seemed pretty okay to me. You know, there was a thing where he took a couple on a video I saw and helped them to take communion, even though they weren't Christians. One of the husband, I think, was pursuing it. The wife was really skeptical. And actually, in taking the little communion, she really felt the presence of God. You know, and you know, it was one of those things I thought, yeah, okay, that's good. You know, I mean, we had a really interesting thing on Sunday in our church service. You know, I got to the center here, and there was a lady standing outside who was on a walker thing, you know, sort of a on wheels type of walker thing. She was really old, and she said, "Oh, I've come today." And I said, "Oh, how did you come?" And she's, "Oh, I met some person," and he said, "Oh, it'd be really good for you to go there." And I'm looking, thinking, "Ooh, do I really think she's gonna fit in here?" You know, but she came in and she sort of sat and people were chatting to her, and turns out she was 91 years old. And so she sat in, I usually share first on a Sunday morning, so she sat listening, or falling asleep actually. She, you know, she didn't engage in all it, she was falling asleep. But when I did the exercise at the end of it of actually engaging Jesus and engaging the Father and stuff, it's like she was right in it. And while we started to worship, she got up and she started to sing. And she then, at the end, it's like there was a lot of prophetic stuff going on. But she came forward and she gave her testimony. She said, "I've been searching the cathedrals and the churches around the world for him, and he came and met me this morning." And it was just, we were in tears, you know, it was like, whoa. But she met with God, and she said, "I've carried this burden and weight all my life, and he's lifted it off me." You know, so God can interact with people who aren't believers, and I think we just got to be open for that willingness to interact with people and do those things. So it was pretty much, you know, it was a pretty awesome encounter, you know. So I think do I believe that we could live without food? Yeah, so long as we're connected to the source of life. And, you know, they do just take communion because they're taking that small amount, and it is a small amount. It's not like, oh, I'm going to eat a whole loaf. It's like they take a small amount and they believe and are in faith that that is going to sustain them, because the breath of life is going to produce the energy, all the energy they need. You know, and you know, it seems to work for those guys. You know, I can't say I'm there yet with the total desire to pursue that, but if God leads me in that direction, I would, you know, without a doubt, because I think ultimately, you know, do I want to be transfigured, and do I want to be radiating glory, and do I want to be changed? Then, you know, then that might be something that's needed. That being said, Jesus, after he resurrected, ate a breakfast with the disciples on the beach. So, you know, he didn't have any problem with eating. You know, and I don't have any problem with eating either. It's a pleasant experience most of the time. So, yeah. Okay.
Well, Mike, I was really hoping we would have a time to do an activation. I don't know how much time you have, or if you think we have enough time to do a quick one, or.
Yeah, I'm sure we have. What is it that you would like to do? Anything particular you want to go, or?
I don't know. Maybe mountains, or just you know, activating around the ark, you know, getting mandates, some okay. of that kind of stuff, maybe.
All right. Okay. Well. Sure. Yeah. Well, we can certainly step into to do that. Yeah, without any problem. Okay, yeah. If I drop out, just carry on, you know. Don't worry about it. Okay. So I just encourage you just to close your eyes and just relax and just begin to engage your spirit. There's an open heaven over you. By faith, just step in. Jesus invites you to come up here. So just walk into the realm of heaven. Just allow all your senses to begin to feel as your spirit communicates what it's like and just let Jesus take you by the hand. And he will lead you through the realms and the veils, the way and the truth and the life. And just let him bring you around his presence in the ark. Come to the Holy of Holies, to that place where you think about his name. Just begin to think about the name of God. Yod, Hey, Vav, Hey, the lion, the ox, the eagle, the man, the four faces of God. Just sense his presence. Open up your heart, surrender to him. Just begin to feel the frequency of his voice, of his person. Just begin to resonate and come into harmony with him. Just allow your spirit to be joined. Just begin to look in to his will and purpose. Allow him to open up the veil of your heart to your destiny and purpose. Now, as you're there, just begin to see yourself stepping into him. Stepping into him and begin to look out from his perspective around your life right now. You know, is there disorder that you need to see from the perspective of the lion? Is there purpose that you need to see prophetic perspective, the ox? Do you need plans and blueprints from the perspective of the eagle to soar seeing the bigger picture? Or is there things that you need to engage with the priestly function of the man to connect heaven and earth, to connect with people, situations, circumstances? Just open up your heart to him. Now, for whatever perspective or face of God that you're drawn to, just be open to receive in your spirit a mandate, an authorization for something today or something around what you've been thinking about. Just receive that authorization. Receive that mandate. It may come as a picture of a scroll. It may come as a thought or an impression or a knowing within your spirit. Just allow your spirit, your heart, to receive that mandate. Just the revelation of that mandate, that authorization, come to you. Now, just allow Jesus again to take you by the hand. Let him lead you from that place, bringing you down through the realms of the kingdom to engage with your mountain. Just take your place, your throne. Be seated. If you feel you need authorization, just allow Jesus to give you a crown, scepter, mantle. If you already have those, then just step into them. And just allow your spirit to direct your thoughts, to administer the mandate that you've given. Allow your spirit to lead you what to do next. Yeah. Is there further authorization that's needed? Do I need angelic assignment? Just take a few minutes, few seconds, just to sense, where do I need to go? Do I need a strategy? You may feel, no, you just need to start calling things. You need to frame something. You may feel you just need to creatively release a prophetic declaration about this area, this mandate, calling things that be not as if they were. Just be open. Allow your spirit to lead your thoughts, to lead what you say. If you feel you need angelic assignment, then just let Jesus take you to the court of angels to engage with the angelic realm, and just let those assign themselves, come, volunteer, step forward around your assignment. And just again, just sense whether you need to direct them, release them, send them forth. Just sense what your spirit is directing you to do. If from that mountain you feel you need a strategy, then again, just ask Jesus to take you to the strategy room, to the war room, and there you can present the mandate like a scroll before the court, the bench, and just be open to your spirit to receive a mandate, an authorization, a strategy for outworking what you've been called to do. It may come right now directly as thoughts. You may see something being written. You may see something being established. But actually, it just be maybe your spirit will receive it now, and it will begin to be outworked as you begin to administer it. Now just sense again being on your mountain, administering the kingdom. Just see down into this realm from that perspective. What do you need to administer? What do you need to see changed? What do you need to see loosed? What do you need to see come into agreement and harmony? Just allow your spirit to direct you, to lead you in that administration. Just allow your spirit to lead. Is there any practical strategy that you've been given that you need to release on earth as you've established it in heaven? Prepare that you can bring back the testimony of what you've experienced. You may have received just fleeting things, then this becomes the doorway back into encounter. You can encounter it again. Just prepare your heart, prepare yourself to bring the revelation that you've received. Whether your mind has caught up with it yet, just allow your spirit to bring that revelation, to step back into this realm, to administer in this realm what you've established in heaven. See that coming through the gateways of your life. Just allow, as a sense, that your spirit is going to flow through soul and body to create an atmosphere authorized with that mandate around your life, that you're authorized to administer the kingdom with authority and power. And just sense the power and the authority that you've been given as a son of God to speak and to act and to flow from heaven. Feel the source of life flowing through you. Just begin to sense the realm of the spirit around you, your angels, your personal angels. They're with you. Just sense their presence. You may feel you want to assign them. Just look in the realm of the spirit around you. What can you see? What can you feel? What are the impressions that you're getting about the spiritual realm, the atmosphere around your life? And just see a flow filling that atmosphere with God's presence, His glory as it flows through you. Your spirit expanding beyond the limits of your physical body and creating that realm of the kingdom around your life, the realm of blessing, the realm of favor, provision, protection. And now you can just step back and engage again. Okay. Now, you know, in things like that, you know, it takes practice and it takes tuning in to allow your spirit to lead you, but you've just got to go learn to flow with it. You know, sometimes there are fleeting glimpses of things that you receive, catch hold of them, and then begin to go with the flow of those things. You know, when we first do these things, it's not necessarily that we're going to get a full-blown Technicolor movie and we're standing in it and we see everything like that. We're learning to for our spirit to engage. If it's very visual and very active and everything's flowing, that's great. But don't be concerned if it isn't. You know, it's my spirit knowing where it is and what it's doing, being connected to the flow of God that really matters, and just go with it. You know?
Well, a real quick question. This has happened to me now a couple of times. When I come to my throne in my mountain and I walk up to sit down on my throne, a few weeks ago I did it one time and there was a scroll laying on my throne and I wasn't sure, okay, somebody left it here for me. Well, today there were two of them laying there.
Yeah.
I mean, when we just did it, what would be the, I mean, is that something I forgot to pick up or just something the Lord's trying to show me, or what would you say?
Well, in a sense, what it's probably indicating is that there are things that you're authorized to do that you need to continue doing. You know, there are authorizations. You know, I tend to take the scrolls and have them in my heart, or a mandate within my heart, but actually having them on your throne is symbolic of your have the authority to administer those scrolls. Then it's like, okay, well, what are they? What's in them? You still have to sense what's in them, because unless you open them and can read it, you have to have an understanding, this is a scroll that gives me authority in this. This may well be tied to this, and you need to know and have a sense of what it is to be able to administer it. But it may well just be, hey, look, as a reminder, you have authority here over this and this. And the fact that there was one and now there's two may be indicative that you have an increasing sense of authority.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was great. We need to do that more often.
But that's, you see, that's what I do every day. Mm-hmm. That pathway, you know, I just took you straight into it. I follow that pathway every single day. You know, and, you know, I learn to look at from the perspective that God wants me to see from. So for me, it is a daily part of my lifestyle that I want a mandate for today, whatever it is, or different mandates, and I want to administer them. And, you know, yeah, I can go for different places. Sometimes I, you know, when there's something new, then sometimes I need to get authorization, and I'll go to the court chancellors, or, you know, I'll go to different places. Often, you know, if I need any wisdom or insight, I'll go to talk to wisdom. I'll go to wisdom's heights, and I'll get her to help me understand the nature of, you know, so there's two scrolls, they're on my mountain. What do I do with them? I'm not really getting any clarity. Okay, I'll take those scrolls to wisdom, and I will look for wisdom to be unveiled and unfurled, because she's there. According to Proverbs 14:16, she's there to help kings, princes, and nobles rule and establish righteousness and justice. So, you know, if I have any doubts, then I go and ask, and, you know, look for what is it that I'm supposed to do, or how am I supposed to judicially outwork this, you know. So, you know, it's a lifestyle. You can do it simply like that. You know, I open a door. If you continually go back through that door and you tread that down, it will become as normal and natural to you as it is to me. You just got to keep doing it. Just keep practicing it, and the sort of communication flow will increase so that it's easy, you know, to get that stuff. It's not, sometimes it's not necessarily easy what you do with it. You know, then you have to go and administer it, and sometimes that requires us doing something here as well as doing things there. But it's so much better to come from a perspective, hey, I'm in faith because I know I'm authorized. Therefore, I can then call upon God to do his bit, because I'm seeking first his kingdom and his righteousness, his way of being and doing. Therefore, it's his responsibility to do all the other stuff around it to ensure that I can do that. So I can hold him to account. That's your business and your responsibility. Mine is to do this. I'm trusting you to do all that you need to do. So if you're calling me to do something and I need this, this, and this, I can speak them into being, but I'm trusting that your provision is going to release them and you're going to give me whatever wisdom or insight I need to be able to do that in whatever way. You know, and God does not mind being, have his promises brought to remembrance. He wants us to operate from those promises. So, you know, if things don't seem to be working out, then go back to God and say, hey, here's your promise. You know, you promised this. I'm seeking your kingdom. You need to work this out. You know, because I don't want to be doing his stuff. I want to be doing my stuff. You know, he provides the mercy and grace. I just walk in it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Okie dokie.